The meeting of September 16th to order, and Ms. Becker, would you lead us in the flag salute?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Ms. Becker. Madam Clerk, will you call roll, please?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Ms. Becker?
Here.
Mr. Bryson?
Present.
Mr. Edwardson?
Here.
Ms. Gladyszewski?
Here.
Ms. Hale?
Here.
Ms. Hughes Scandes?
Here.
Mr. Jones?
Here.
Ms. Treem?
Here.
Mayor Weldon?
Here.
The quorum is present.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Now we're moving on to special order of business. Introduction of exchange students. Who is doing the introduction of exchange students?
They are introducing themselves.
Oh, perfect. Well, bring them on up. Come on up. We'll start with you.
I told them when they got here how to introduce themselves. So. Hi, my name is Amelia. I'm 42 years old. I'm from Alaska. And I volunteer with the high school exchange program, AFS.
Hi, my name is Benedicta, and I'm 17 years old, and I'm from Norway.
Welcome. Hi, I'm Nina. I'm 16 years old, and I'm from Germany, and I'm here with Rotary.
Hi, I'm Berke, and I'm from Turkey. I'm 16 years old, and I'm with AFS. It's nice being here.
Hi, I'm Ewan. My name is Kanawatinskun from Thailand. I'm 17 years old, and I'm with AFS program. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Kevin. I'm 17 years old, and I'm from the Netherlands, and I'm here with Rotary, and I'm in the Gastineau Club.
You're not done yet. What have you been surprised, or what do you like the best about Juneau?
I really like the school spirit here. I think it's really funny, and yeah.
I definitely like the nature here. It is so pretty. I went to the Tracy Arm Fjord, and it was amazing. Yeah, it is pretty here.
I think I like most is the end of the road. I mean, basically, it's like so cool to, you know, just stop somewhere.
I really love people here because they are open and they take care of each other, especially in the school.
Yeah, I really like the work.
We can hear you.
Well, I just don't use it.
You'll just have to use a
power. Well, I really like the environment here. Like, it's really beautiful. Yesterday, I went flying over the glaciers, and we landed on a beach. It was really great. And also, the community is great here. Everyone is open to each other, and they're all welcome and help each other. So, yeah, thanks for that.
Okay, well, why
don't
you exchange? What has been your favorite food so far?
So I really like the food, which is cooking Wade. It's really good.
Good job.
I think the most good thing I had here was maybe tacos with salmon. You know, salmon was really good.
I like salmon the most because, like, we did fishing like last week and we got a salmon, and we cook it like in a Thai food called tom yum, and it tastes really good.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah, I really like halibut. I had it, and it was really good on the sandwich. And also, really surprising, I wouldn't have expected it, but the hot dogs from Costco are pretty good as well.
I would say maybe the candy, that you have a lot of good candy here. especially the donuts. I really
like that. Okay, I won't torture you guys anymore. So I know you guys like pins. And then you have to come all the way around and shake everybody's hand.
You good? They're all the same ink. Not green ink.
So you guys can come around and shake everybody's hand. Welcome.
Hi. Hey. Hi. Thank you.
Welcome. Nice to meet you,
fantastic
too.
Fantastic color.
So nice to have you here.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome. Welcome. Nice to have you guys here.
I love it. Welcome.
Nice to meet you.
Thank you.
Have a good year. Thanks for coming. Welcome.
Nice to meet you. Thank you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for being here.
Devin, my man, so you got to go on your flight trip yesterday. It was good.
Welcome to Juno. It's good to have you. Yes.
Nice
thanks,
to meet you, sir.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you for saying that, man. That was nice of you.
Welcome to Juno. Thank you.
Pretty cool.
Thank you.
Very. Welcome to Juno.
Thank you.
And the exchange students can stay as long as they'd like. They can leave at any time. Okay, that brings us to our next special order of business, the Proclamation for Energy Efficiency Day 2019. Is that why you're here, Steve?
Yeah.
Do you have anybody else up here that is I'm presenting this to? Well, then it's just you. Come on up. So this is our proclamation for Energy Efficiency Day, which is October 2nd, 2019. Whereas the U.S. Department of Energy has designated October as National Energy Action Month to encourage citizens to save energy, water, and money and strengthen U.S. energy security and build a more robust economy. And whereas a nationwide network of energy efficiency groups and partners has designated the first Wednesday in October as the National Annual Energy Efficiency Day to emphasize the important role energy plays in our nation. And whereas the General Renewable Energy Strategy contemplates making the organization a leader in energy efficiency and adoption of renewable energy, a reduction in GINO's dependence on fossil fuels for space heating, a reduction in GINO's dependence on fossil fuels for transportation, supportive efforts to provide new renewable energy supplies for GINO, and whereas implementing energy efficiency and conservation measures provides the cheapest, quickest, and cleanest way to meet our energy needs and reduce utility bills for residential, business, and industrial customers, and whereas GINO received world recognition on energy efficiency leadership with our combined community energy efficiency efforts resulting from the 2008 to 2009 avalanches to the Snohomish transmission system, and whereas the City and Borough of GINO, GINO organization, businesses, and citizens continue to implement clean energy policies and programs that improve energy efficiency, now, therefore, I, Beth Weldon, do hereby proclaim October 2nd, 2019, as Energy Efficiency Day as a means to celebrate GINO's energy efficiency efforts and to encourage continued efforts to improve our community and urge the citizens of GINO to join together in supporting our clean energy strategies, practice energy efficiency and conservation practices, and move toward increased energy efficiency now and in the future.
Say is that you guys deserve a lot of credit for recognizing this and keeping things moving. Thank you.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
All right, that brings us to approval of minutes. Ms. Becker.
These minutes are so perfect. They were
I could barely read them.
Oh, it's because we have none. Sorry about that. And you guys let me do it.
That was good.
Okay, we're moving right along. Manager's request for agenda changes. I believe you have a couple, Mr. Manager.
Madam Mayor, I have two requests for agenda changes, and if we could take them in order, I think that would be easier. The first would be to remove Resolution 2A, Resolution 2865, authorizing the manager to provide temporary law enforcement aid to the city of Craig. That no longer is necessary. Craig has found a solution to their law enforcement needs. So I would ask that we remove that resolution from the agenda.
Okay. And what's the next one?
The second one would be under public hearing. That would be item G, Ordinance 2019-06B, the ordinance regarding the appropriation to the JAC. Per our discussion this morning, members of the public have found this ordinance confusing since it comes before the election on which the electorate will be voting on the advisory question about grant support to the JAC. And even though the ordinance would be conditioned on the affirmative support of the voters, I think it makes sense to postpone this to our next regularly scheduled assembly meeting.
Which is October
14th. On October 14th. Thank you.
Okay. Is that it, Mr. Manager?
Those are the two on the agenda. Yes.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Manager. So public participation on non-agenda items. And Madam Clerk, before we get that, I should have looked to the Assembly. Is there any objection to the agenda changes from the manager? Seeing and hearing none, the agenda is approved.
Do you have a request for a change?
All righty, we can certainly do that. Can I have my mic back? Apparently, we had an exchange student just show up, so we will introduce them or have them introduce themselves. Amelia, you want to be our guinea pig again?
Sure. Okay. Hello.
Hi.
I'm going to let her have the mic first, and she'll tell you what to say, and then I'll be here.
Thank you for coming together. Get them lined up here. Facebook friend. Said hello. My name is Samantha, and I am 68 years old, and I am from Antarctica.
Hi, my name is Samantha. I'm from Peru and I'm 15 years old.
Perfect. Okay, so our two questions are, what do you like most about Juneau?
Okay, I love Juneau, but I think the weather, because it's really rainy. I don't have rain in Peru because I live in the desert. I live in Nazca. So, yeah.
What's your favorite food so far?
Crab.
All right. Yeah. Going for the good stuff.
Are you feeding her well back there, Fred?
So Sam is where my Mary Ellen is. They've been chatting.
Welcome.
Hey, how's it going, Sam?
So it looks that, like we just have one public participation right now. So would Mr. Clemens please come up? And please state your name and physical address, please. And you have 3 minutes. The the lights will help you there on your left.
Okay. Mike Clemens, I live in the Valley. Juneau's an amazing place. A lot of people, hardworking, elected officials, volunteer a lot of time, amazing staff, but I'm here to complain. Okay. Voter information. The city needs to do better both on timing and content. Absentee voting began today, but voters have not yet received the city's voter information mail-out. Since I've been asking about it for some time, staff told me when and where it was on your website. But after I read it, I had questions. So what? Why is its timing important? In our last regular election, only 79% of ballots cast were regular. About 21% were absentee. Maybe again this year, 1 in 5 Juneauites will vote early, and in my opinion, should be informed before voting. Yard signs, TV ads, and Empire editorials have their place, but should supplement, not supplant, reliable, complete, clear explanations provided by the city. I'll be meeting with these folks, and I'm sorry to complain in public, but timing is of the essence, as lawyers say, and I'm not a lawyer. Here's some of my questions. Why should I depend on editorials to tell me that the city has already spent $1 million in support of the new jack, and that the new jack will be more than twice the size of Centennial Hall? How much of the Centennial Hall project is for deferred maintenance, and how much is for upgrades to make it more likely to break even rather than continue to lose money each year? Having two competing facilities, one public and one private nonprofit, raises questions. Which convention planner would want to book an old, slightly upgraded site when a brand new place, twice its size, sits right across the parking lot? Will Centennial Hall ever break even in such circumstances? Remodeling is much more expensive than rebuilding. Maybe our first convention center is so functionally obsolete that it should just be torn down after the new jack is built. Times change. I saw my old building turned into a parking lot recently, so that's what made me think of this. Big projects should answer all relevant questions up front before asking for public money. It always takes longer to do things right. Juneau may need something, but current plans leave far too many obvious questions unanswered in the face of immediate, ongoing budget squeeze. Did I make it? Okay. And as you know, I've complained to you and about you in other venues, so if you want to throw questions at me, just don't make them too embarrassing, and I'll try to answer.
Thank you, Mr. Clemens. Any clarifying questions for Mr. Clemens tonight? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. Are there any other public that would like to speak on non-agenda items tonight? Didn't get a chance to sign in. Okay, seeing and hearing none, we will move to our consent agenda. Are there any public requests for consent agenda changes other than ordinance for introduction? Seeing and hearing none, are there any assembly requests for consent agenda changes? Seeing and hearing none, assembly action. Ms. Blaszewski.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I would move the consent agenda as amended, and I would ask for unanimous consent.
Any objections? Seeing and hearing none, the consent agenda is passed. Okay, that moves us to public hearing. Madam Clerk.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Transfer T2024, a transfer of $200,000 from CIPH 51-116 Marine Park to Taku Upland Improvement Archipelago to CIPH 51-122 Docks Security Stations.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Mr. Manager.
This request is to transfer $200,000 in additional funds for the construction award contingency, construction administration, and inspection for security checkpoints at the approach docks to the Alaska Steamship and Cruise Ship Terminal facilities. With evolving Coast Guard security requirements and the need to better manage passenger embarkation to cruise ships, Docks and Harbors commenced design efforts to create security checkpoints. Currently, there is $450,000 in marine passenger fees available for the project. Due in part to uncertainty with steel tariffs, the most recent construction estimate placed the construction award at $550,000. Dachshund Harbor's board reviewed and recommended approval of this grant funding at its August 29, 2019 meeting. I recommend you approve this transfer.
Thank you, Mr. Manager. Is there any member of the public who would like to speak to this transfer? Seeing and hearing none, we will go to the assembly. Mrs. Becker, we'll let you have that one.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I move we adopt transfer T2024 and ask for unanimous consent.
Are there any objections? Ms. Glaszewski.
Object for the purpose of the question.
Go ahead with your question.
I just wanted to hear a... Oh, never mind. I take it back. I remove my objection.
Okay. Any other objections? Seeing and hearing none, the motion passes. Item number B, Madam Clerk.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Bid award, cruise ship security checkpoint, DH19050.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Mr. Manager.
With evolving Coast Guard security requirements and the need to better manage passenger embarkation to cruise ships, there's a need to create security checkpoints at the approach docks to the Alaska Steamship and Cruise Ship Terminal facilities. The project consists of all activities necessary to construct true downtown cruise ship security facilities, as shown in the contract documents. The work generally includes manufacturing and erection of steel framing, installation of glass paneling, roofing, lighting, and other associated improvements. Bids were opened on this project on September 10, 2019. Dachshund Harbor's board recommended award of the project at a special board meeting on September 11, 2019. Three bids were obtained. Southeast Earth Movers was the low bidder at $596,600. I recommend award of this project to Southeast Earth Movers in the total amount of bid of $596,600.
Thank you, Mr. Manager. Any member of the public wish to speak to this transfer or bid award?
That's the question.
You have to come up.
Hi, my name is Ben Murray. I reside in Douglas. I was just wondering who, if this is a security checkpoint, who's staffing this once it's built and operational?
Okay, we normally just take testimony, but we will allow this one time. Mr. Manager.
Madam Mayor, Mr. Yucatel could answer it, but I would imagine that there's going to be a combination of cruise ship security staff and Dachshund Harbor staff. That are manning the checkpoints, and I see a nod from Mr. Yucatel at the back of the room.
All right.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Any other member of the public wish to testify this bit of word? Seeing and hearing none, we'll bring it back to the assembly. Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I move that the assembly approve the bid award of cruise ship security checkpoint and ask unanimous consent.
Ms. Glaszewski.
Object for the question. The question. This is the one I meant to talk about. I just wanted to talk about if we could get some explanation about the $600,000 for two small buildings that we sort of objected to when there was a $150,000 building. So I want to understand why it's so expensive to build these things.
So we're bringing Mr. Yucatel up. He's prepared for your question.
It's good, because it's a lot of money.
Mayor, Assembly members, so just to refresh everybody, what's going on here? Dachshund Harbor manages the two privately owned facilities, the Alaska Steamship berth here and the South Approach Dock called the Cruise Ship Terminal Dock here. And over the years, or since we constructed the 16B project, we've been required to man the gangway leading down to the floats. And so the issue is our folks are exposed to rain, wind, as they have to check everybody that comes down the ramp, and then they have to get checked again as they enter the skin of the ship. So right now, what we have is a small kiosk like this that's got plexiglass on two sides. We have a tent for waiting area, and the goal is to move people through. So if you think about where we're going with docks and harbors, think of, I'll just say, the Ovation of the Seas. 6,400 passengers and crew can potentially come down the ramp on a given Sunday. Think about TSA at the airport. On a busy day, maybe you have 600 passengers trying to get in maybe a two-hour period. We've got 6,000 trying to, you know, enter in 1, 2, 3 hour time frame. So we went through and we want to build basically a queuing area, checkpoint. This is a plan view of both the approach docks. And we'll have people that will check, that appropriately check credentials as they go down the ramp. And this is what we envision it will be. This is it's a modest construction project. $596,600 is a lot of money. It's a competitive bid, open bid environment, and we typically award not what we want to pay, but what the free market bears. Did the math and what this insulation is. It's galvanized steel, glass, and a roof, and electrical. That's what the project is. There's nothing fancy about it. The city manager mentioned that when we started this back in May, we had hoped to get a FEMA port security grant. We asked for a $450,000 grant. We were told in August that we weren't competitive. That's the scale that we're talking about, $450,000. And then as we were going to bid, our estimator indicated that it was because of the potential uncertainty with steel tariffs that the project was bid at, or he estimated at $550,000. Of course, the parent low bidder, Southeast Earth Movers, came in at $596,000. And really what this is, it's a scalable erector set where we can, you know, we intend to build this on the end of the approach dock, but as the needs, as more Coast Guard needs come into bear, we can add to this kind of like an erector set. So it's, the cost is 55% in materials, 15% in shipping, and about 30% in labor. So we pay Davis-Bacon labor rates. Some of the other intel that we got is that there's so much work going on in Seattle for vertical construction that the three contractors that bid it only could find one steel fabricator that would bid the project. So now we've only got one supplier that would bid the steel fabrication galvanizing. This is not unlike, if you guys can remember, the Archipelago project, which is a lot of steel as well. We actually delayed that bid opening because two of the contractors came forward and said they couldn't get steel fabricators to bid the job. So those are the other aspects driving up the cost. It's also a year-round structure. So when it's designed, it's got to be designed for up wind load, upload on the roof. It's got to be securely mounted in the foundation. You know, this is a low cost. It's money up front, but maintenance is very low cost. There won't be, there's no wood to take care of. It's glass, vanilla panels, and steel. So it'll last 50 plus years. That works out to be about $5,900 a year per structure, about 2 cents per passenger coming through the facility. If also, because we have to design around campers, it's a secure facility. We'll be able to lock it at night and know that people won't be able to get in, access it, and sleep there. We believe it'll be aesthetically pleasing, and we think it's appropriate for, here's my guy sitting inside a building with lights and heat, as opposed to sitting outside in a little shack. So those are, and then just some other renderings of what the very simple, not a plush facility, but we think it's appropriate for the needs of my employees and for the city.
Thanks. Thank you, Mr. Ugatel. Ms. Treem.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. If 55% of the cost is steel, why don't you build it out of something else?
For maintenance. So we think that when we build it for steel, galvanized steel will last forever. Anytime you put wood, you're going to have to maintain it, you're going to paint it, you have to, at some point in that 50-year lifespan, you're going to have to replace it.
Follow-up, Madam Mayor?
Yes.
But how much would it cost to build it out of a different material?
Well, I think my guys deserve better than a tent. So the spectrum would be a tent to steel.
Ms. Hughes-Gannies and then Ms. Becker.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Did you receive any comments on your failure to win the FEMA grant?
No, we were just told you weren't successful. The Port of Alaska, Port of Anchorage, was successful getting a $550,000 grant, and you just heard that we were not.
Okay, Ms. Becker.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Mr. Ugatel, will there be security? How are we going to protect those windows from getting broken?
I'm looking at my port engineer. They are secure. They're not plexiglass. They won't scratch. It's glass.
Cameras will be there. We'll have cameras still.
We'll have cameras on the location. I suppose there's. You can't prevent every, if somebody wants to do harm to it, they'll be able to do harm to it, but it's, it'll be as secure as we can make it.
So, no, any other questions? So, my question, I'm going to follow up to Ms. Treem. So, we didn't look at building it with wood. We didn't get a cost estimate if we built it with wood?
We did not.
Okay, thank you. Any more questions for Mr. Ugatel? Okay, Mr. Jones has asked for unanimous consent on the bid award. Are there any objections? Seeing and hearing none, it is passed. Thank you, Mr. Ugatel, for bringing pictures. We like pictures. All right, moving on to item C, Madam Clerk.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Ordinance 2019-32, an ordinance authorizing the sale of city and borough of land located at Peterson Hill and establishing the terms and conditions related to the sale.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Mr. Manager.
The 86-lot Peterson Hill subdivision is proposed to be constructed in three stages. The first stage consists of 17 lots, and construction is virtually complete. The Planning Commission approved the final plat on July 9, 2019. Lands Division desires to offer the lots for sale in advance of next year's building season. Minimum lot prices will be established by appraisal. City financing is available for all lots sold. Three disposal methods are proposed for this land sale: sealed competitive bid of 5 lots, a block sale of 1 unit composed of 6 lots, fixed price lottery for 6 lots. Any remaining lots that do not sell through the initial process would be made available through over-the-counter sales on a first-come, first-served basis. July 8, 2019, Assembly Committee of the Whole reviewed this disposal proposal and recommended approval. I recommend you adopt this ordinance.
Thank you, Mr. Manager. Are there any members of the public that wish to testify on this ordinance? Seeing and hearing none, we'll bring it back to the Assembly. Mr. Edwardson.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I move that the Assembly adopt Ordinance 2019-32, and I request unanimous consent.
Hands up everywhere. Mr. Jones.
Thank you. I'll object for a question, if I might.
What's your question?
Mr. Manager, in your report, you said any remaining lots that don't sell would be mailed available over the counter. On page 3 of 4 of the ordinance, starting on page 8, line 18 and a half, section 8, says the manager may sell any unsold parcels as sealed competitive bid or over the counter bid. I assume the ordinance is how they would be disposed of, as opposed to the manager's report. Manager's report just says over the counter. This says either concealed competitive bids or over the counter.
Madam Mayor, Mr. Jones is correct. The ordinance would govern. And I would imagine that if we have substantial unsold parcels, we would bring back to the Assembly for guidance in that event.
Follow up then?
Go ahead, Mr. Jones.
Would that still hold if the block sale of the 6 units didn't sell?
Mr. Banjer.
Madam Mayor, if the block sale didn't sell, I think probably it invites a broader policy discussion of how best to dispose of the property. So, again, I think the Assembly likely would have ideas on what the next step should be.
Thanks.
All right, Ms. Hale.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I recall that the Lena Loop sale, that there may have been 2 lots that did not sell when the initial bid was requested, and I'm wondering what's happened with those 2 lots.
Madam Mayor, Mr. Cheney is here, and I think he can give us an update on those 2 lots from the Lena
sale. Mr. Cheney.
Thank you, Mr. Manager.
Good evening. It's really exciting to be here after all this time getting this project ready. The question's about the Lena lot sale that we just had. There were 2 lots that were unsold, so we have them available as over-the-counter. Just today, we had a party come in and put in the initial paperwork to buy one. So we believe we have a pending sale for one of the 2 remaining. And we've had quite a few inquiries, so I wouldn't be surprised if we have both of them sold within a year.
Thank you, Mr. Cheney.
Question answered. Any other questions? All right, any objections? Seeing and hearing none, the ordinance passes. That brings us to item D, Madam Clerk.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Ordinance 2019-33, an ordinance amending the City and Borough Code relating to criminal offenses and penalties.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Mr. Manager.
The state recently adopted a suite of criminal justice reform legislation. The state legislation clarified ambiguous terms, reclassified crimes, and generally lengthened penalties. CBJ criminal codes generally mirror the applicable state criminal laws to avoid confusion and to enable CBJ to independently prosecute cases to protect the community. On July 25, 2019, Committee of the Whole directed the City Attorney to prepare an ordinance that updates the CBJ criminal justice codes. A memo from the City Attorney summarized the changes. I recommend you adopt this ordinance.
Thank you, Mr. Manager. We do have one member of the public that would like to speak to this, Mr. Habiger.
They called worse.
Please state your name and address, please.
Certainly. Thank you, Madam Mayor. For the record, my name is Don Habiger, and I reside at 9300 Dew Drive. Tonight, I'm speaking with my Juno Reentry Coalition hat on. I am the community coordinator for the Juno Reentry Coalition. So the mission of the Juno Reentry Coalition is to promote public safety by identifying and implementing strategies that increase the successful reentry into the community and reduces the likelihood of their return to prison through recidivating. The coalition believes that minimizing barriers to reentry improves our community's public safety. Proposed Ordinance 2019-33 addresses the city's Criminal Offense and Penalties Code, and my comments tonight focus on a few items that might increase barriers to successful reentry into the community after incarceration. As the city policymaker, the coalition is asking that you look into these concerns and, if necessary, make appropriate modifications or simply set sidebars through intent language so that we do not create additional barriers to those trying to rebuild their lives after incarceration. The coalition does not say that there should be no sanctions for criminal behavior, only that we should not impede successful reentry with artificially high barriers. The two areas of concern are maximum fine amounts for a Class A misdemeanor at $25,000 and adding new sections of code outside of those already in alignment with state change found in HB 49. Many of those returning to the community post-incarceration receive minimum wage employment and have no financial resources to draw from. If you're earning minimum wage, it is exceedingly hard to take care of your basic living necessities and repay $25,000. A policy that strikes a balance is key in helping achieve successful reentry. The other area of concern is adding new sections of code not within HB 49 that merely serve to pile on charges and do not clearly address public safety needs. For example, we add in vehicle theft tools, a part of HB 49. And if you happen to have one of these tools in your listed devices in your possession with intent, you're guilty of this crime. Presumably, the same individual could also be charged with attempt since they seem to display with intent to commit a crime. The question is, are we piling on additional crime? Is it a useful tool? If the answer is yes, adopt it. If we should modify it, we ask that you take time to vet this and modify it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Habinger. Are there any clarifying questions?
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Mayor. So I know where the first one is. It's on page 1 of 55, line 23, about the $25,000, your first objection. But where is the second thing? You refer to extra things. Where exactly is that in the ordinance?
Yeah, I found these in a document produced by our city attorney, and it's dated August 13th. It's a nice little kind of graphic, I guess, matrix, if you will. And there's a few sections. Let's see, 4205, 100, it's on page 1, it's attempt, new code section.
Page 59.
Page 6 of 55?
Yes, or page 59 of 122, as Ms. Hales tried to say.
Got it. So, sorry, say that again. Excuse me.
Let me pull out a different document if I may. The code itself. Attempt. I find this on page 6 of 55.
Yep.
And it, okay. And really, it is, I'm wondering if it's ambiguous. A person is guilty of attempt to commit a crime if, with intent to commit a crime, the person engages in conduct which constitutes a substantial step. I suspect that a lawyer understands that better than the coalition, which are lay people. And there may be a very good reason for it. But, again, the concern is, are we piling on layers of crime that become very difficult to shed once you're ready to reenter? And, again, we stress that there are appropriate sanctions. The other point is, and it was just an illustration, and I'm going to look for it. The vehicle theft one, I think. And I know it was for the back of the document. It's on page 27 of 55, for example. And it just simply says, a person commits the crime of possession of a motor vehicle theft tool if the person possesses a motor vehicle theft tool with intent. Again, it's an intent kind of crime. So are they going to be convicted under attempt and also under this new one? they're both seem to be intent type laws. So it's merely just make sure that we're not piling on too many, vet it appropriately, and if there's good reasons, pass it. If they're not, change it.
All right, so before
Thank
we
you
go,
very much.
Stay here. I think this is your venue, Mr. Attorney.
Yes, thank you.
We'll get you, Mr. Bryce.
I will see if I can't address these. I want to give Mr. Haberger some credit. He did reach out to my department, and we have had conversation on this topic. And I think we've been able to work through quite a few of the questions that were raised, and I think we've got, you know, two or three that he identified tonight that are remaining. The first one is on packet page 54 at the bottom. This is the misdemeanor maximum fine amount of $25,000. That amount is in existing code, so it's not changing with this ordinance. And then I'll offer the big policy reason why I think it's a good tool to have available for prosecution. And as Mr. Haberger identified, it's assessing a fine on somebody with limited means is never an intent of the city. We have, in the 6 years that I have been with the city and involved with the prosecution of crimes, I don't recall any time in which we have even recommended a fine close to $25,000. So I think your prosecution staff is very cognizant of that. And then you've also got defense attorneys to advocate on behalf of a defendant, and you have a judge to determine what's ultimately fair. However, there are times when this maximum penalty, I think, is really fair and reasonable, and the ones case type of examples I can tell you are repeat sales tax offenders that have significant prior contacts with the sales tax office and have typically been prosecuted civilly and are under some sort of payment plan. When they reoffend, that tends to be somebody who knew exactly what they were doing, and having a high fine amount has been one tool that we have used to at least stop that type of behavior. And so sales tax cases are the one tool that I think having a high fine amount is very effective, and there may be other one-off scenarios, but it's definitely, as Mr. Haberger identified, it's not something that we even come close to on a day-to-day basis.
Thank you for that explanation. And do you want to talk about the other two?
I will see if I can't do both of these. The possession of motor vehicle tool, theft tools, that's on packet page 80. This is a new substantive offense that I think is extremely valuable for Juneau. It is identified in HB 49 as an additional tool for us. I can think of one case in particular where we had somebody caught on video camera, on a home surveillance camera or business surveillance camera, with motor vehicle theft tools, and it was very clear what that person was doing, but because that individual did not physically break into the structure or physically break into a car, although that individual was peering into windows, it was very clear what that individual went there to do. Whether it's a definitive prosecution, that's a whole different story, and that can be fought out in court. But I think there's a really good reason for the police department to have a tool to stop that individual, and there's probable cause for that individual to be held and at least be interviewed and potentially charged with this crime. So I think this is one of the few tools that we don't have available that I think would be very helpful in the future.
So, and to ask Mr. Haberger's question, what would they be charged with for this one, the intent or the attempt or which?
So in that fact pattern that I just described, that individual would only be charged with this possession of motor vehicle theft tools. There's no desire on your prosecution staff, and I can vouch while I'm here that your two prosecutors do an incredible job of not stacking on charges. They do seek justice, but that doesn't mean you stack on charges. And I'll speak generally to the attempt charge, which is identified on packet page 59. And so this is a new provision to Juneau. It's modeled after identical language in state code. It is not required in HB 49. However, this is a tool that I think can be valuable for us. So there are times where, especially in plea deal negotiations, where we have probable cause that the elements of a crime have been satisfied. However, due to some unique situations, whether with the defendant or most likely with witnesses, it might be very valuable to have a tool somewhere in between having to go to trial on something and having to dismiss a charge. And so this is an intermediate step that I think is valuable. It just because it's in code doesn't mean it will be stacked on, and I can give you assurances that we will not pile on or stack on this charge. So I think it's a tool that's available for us. I think it's a tool that could be helpful to the community. And I'll stop there.
That sounds good. Mr. Bryson, do you have a question for Mr. Habiger?
Yes, okay. Madam Mayor.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. And thank you, Mr. Habiger, for coming tonight. The more successful that you are at your job, the better off the entire community is. So I really appreciate the work you do. My question goes to recidivism rates. I wanted to go back at least 5 years prior to SB 91. Do you know roughly what recidivism rates were at that time prior to SB 91? And then do you have recidivism rates over the last 2 years during the thickness of SB 91? How did the two different time periods compare for recidivism rates?
Through the chair, Assemblymember Bryson, there's my state head, I guess. At any rate, I can only answer that this way, and it's not extremely helpful for Juneau specifically because, to my knowledge, DOC keeps track of this information. They aggregate that number statewide, and I have been unable to find a valid Juneau number. However, statewide, pre-91, we were up around 68% recidivism rate. When DOC testified earlier this year in the legislature, we brought it down to about 65. So some improvement statewide, not, I think, what we all had hoped for.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Mr. Habiger, for coming.
Any other questions for Mr. Habiger? Seeing and hearing none, thank you for your testimony, and thank you for the job that you do. All right, is there any other public testimony for Ordinance 2019-33? Seeing and hearing none. We'll bring it to the assembly. Ms. Beam, I think I'm on you.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. And whoever's phone keeps beeping, turn it off, please. And now I move Ordinance 2019-33 and ask unanimous consent.
Any objections? Mr. Jones.
Thank you. I was particularly, I went through Mr. Haber's email earlier today and didn't have a problem with several of these, but the one I did have a trouble with is the attempt. And so I'd like to ask the attorney some questions if I could.
Certainly.
Since primarily the responsibility of the CBJ is on misdemeanors, in most state laws that I'm familiar with, especially AS 1131-120 conspiracy, those are almost always at a felony level. I mean, conspiracy charges or conspiracy to commit are almost all geared toward either some kind of organized crime or some kind of gang relations or, people that do this, as a living fencing. They're almost always geared to felons. This is geared to misdemeanors. And to go through the issues of attempt and conspiracy for basically a Class B misdemeanor seems a lot. And I'm curious as to why we would go through the issues of having to maybe try somebody on a conspiracy charge for a Class B misdemeanor.
Mr. Attorney.
Sure. So I'll draw a little distinction. We are not creating a conspiracy charge, so this one is only attempt. And that's a slight distinction, but it is a little bit meaningful because you're right. We have historically only had, and I'll call fully committed crime offenses. This would be a first for a potential partial crime, if you want to go there. And the distinction here is that the individual has to have intent and commit a substantial step towards that crime. So that's a little bit of nuance. It does have meaning. Like I described earlier, the big reason why I am offering this as a tool for the community is really for plea bargaining. If you want, you know, more case-specific examples, we can bring one of your prosecutors up, and she can describe a little bit more of case specifics where this may be helpful.
Mr. Jones?
I'd like to know that because I'm trying to think of, as I go through the ordinances and I think about a Class A or a Class B misdemeanor, I go through the state laws, and I'm, Class B misdemeanors oftentimes almost crimes of opportunity. You get in a fight in a bar, you maybe bust somebody's window in a car, it's not something that you're planning out too much. So I'm curious as to what kind of crime you might actually think about an attempt for.
So Emily Wright, one of our prosecutors, is available to try to answer that question in a little bit more detail.
Ms. Wright.
Thank you. Mr. Jones, so I went through today, I anticipated this question, especially after speaking with Mr. Heberger. So one thing I would tell you, I think a really good example, we've been facing a lot of charges regarding a fraudulent use of an access device. This is something that Juno citizens are facing all the time right now. So you leave a credit card in the Wells Fargo ATM, you walk away, by the time you come back, it's gone. However, if the person isn't able to access your PIN, they haven't actually used your ATM card fraudulently. But with attempt, we could charge them with attempted use of a fraudulent use of an access device. You've also got other things like theft of natural resources. So we don't see these crimes very often, but every now and then, you go onto someone's property, you cut down a tree, you take some dirt, you take some fill. Maybe they don't get off the property, but they've gone through substantial steps. I think that there are situations where you could use them, especially maybe not in a B misdemeanor, disorderly conduct, attempted bar fight after breakup, but we certainly have charges that are very serious and A misdemeanors. Those are situations where it would be very useful, but I echo Mr. Palmer's statement that mostly I see this being used in plea bargains.
Mr. Jones?
I'd like to offer an amendment to Ordinance 2019-33, and that amendment would be the removal of Section 4205-100, attempt. If I could speak to that, please.
Sure.
I think that understanding both attorneys' suggestions, I would like to see this brought back on its own. If, in fact, there are attempts to fraudulently use an access device, a password, a credit card, an ATM card, maybe that ought to be the crime. And I guess I would just like to see this, if it's serious enough for law, they could come back with some real examples. They could come back with maybe an ordinance that might make a little bit more sense to us and not something stuck in a large enough bill that's more or less housekeeping at this point. I'm not saying that I would necessarily object at that point, but I don't want to see it here, and I'd rather us work on that and think about that. Because if there are enough specifics, maybe those are the crimes and it's not the attempt. If we're trying to throw in attempt because we don't have any other way to prosecute somebody uses my ATM but can't figure out my PIN, then I think we got problems. So I would like to see that removed from this ordinance.
Okay, before we act on that motion, Mr. Edwardson had a question, I believe. So I don't know if you need, did you raise your hand, Mr. Edwardson?
I can wait until after it is.
Okay. Ms. Blaschef?
My question would be to get some facts about the motion, so I think I should ask the question.
Okay, Ms. Wright again.
So it's about, you said, could be used in plea bargaining. Could you please elaborate on that for those of us who don't do your work?
Sure.
An example.
That sure. So the charge of attempt reduces the potential penalties and what the person is being found guilty of. There's a variety of reasons why we may look for options to plea bargain. So, for example, we may have witness issues. We may have witnesses that have left the state. They don't want to cooperate. We can't find them. We may have evidence issues where evidence, we had it and then we didn't. There's lots of reasons why that would happen. Not always nefarious. I'm not trying to say that. But there are things that disappear, and it makes it very difficult for us to prosecute the case. It would be great, because we have a victim in those cases, for us to be able to offer something as a plea bargain. And within plea bargaining, we can say, okay, look, plead to this lower charge, plead to this attempted charge, and let's put together things as part of your sentence that will keep our community safe, that will make reparations to the victim, and that will meet the criteria set forth by the court under case law that we have to meet. Does that make sense?
Okay, let me just see if I understand you. You believe the person committed X crime.
Right.
But you can't quite, you think you might not be able to prove it exactly, or right. you say to them, plead to this and we'll drop the other thing.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. So, Mr. Jones, you want to make your motion now?
Sure. My motion would be to remove the section 42-05-100 from ordinance 201933.
All right. Any objection to the motion? Mr. Bryson.
May I speak to my objection, Madam Mayor? So I see the attempt as protection for the citizens of Juneau. We've heard citizens, we've got plenty of victims around Juneau. We've all heard people testify through different public safety venues over the year. My fear is that people would have to wait for a crime to actually be committed against them, whereas having this attempt, and maybe this is where my question is, having this attempt, would this protect the citizens so that they didn't have to wait for the crime to actually be fully committed against them? If somebody looked like they were going to break into the car, that person is committing a crime at that moment, and that the citizens of Juneau don't have to wait for their car to be burglarized, then they can get police assistance. I think this attempt is very important for not only our prosecutorial force, but also our police force. Now, and with the highest level of respect for Mr. Haberger and his work that he's done, I am tired of the criminal element in this community, and this community is fed up with it too. With attempt, when the people have the intent to go commit a crime, this section gives the police and the prosecutors the power to stop it before other Junoites are victimized. So I have all the empathy in the world, but I am... The citizens of Juneau are done being victims. This provides tools so that we don't have to be victims anymore. That's why I will object.
Thank you, Mr. Bryson. Mr. Edwardson.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I'll speak in favor of the amendment. And the reason is I hear what Mr. Bryson's saying. I think that there's people fed up. But I think the unintended consequence of this could be increasing the size of the pool of the criminal element. Simply by making more things illegal. I don't know. I think Mr. Bryson's got a good argument, but I think Mr. Jones has a good point. There's a lot of viewpoints on this. This is a little bit bigger than a housekeeping thing, and I think it should be pulled out and examined thoroughly. And whatever decision we come up with, we make it on purpose. You know, I may vote for it if it's pulled out and addressed individually. I don't know. We haven't had the discussion yet. That's all the amendment's asking for.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Edwardson. Ms. Hughes-Scandy.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. While I am very sympathetic to the maker of the amendment, or I certainly approve of us making sure we vet things thoroughly and we don't rush it, especially when it comes to criminal ordinance, I'm going to speak against this amendment because I feel like, based on the discussion I've heard here tonight, I don't feel like that we're ramming in anything that's too crazy. I feel like it's been explained to my satisfaction, and I certainly want our prosecutors to have the tools they need when there's some minor change that would stop them from prosecuting a case. So I'll be voting against this amendment.
Thank you, Ms. Hughes-Gannies. Any further objection? Mr. Jones.
Just one final comment. I think that the examples that were used tonight wouldn't meet Mr. Bryson's test, because we're talking about plea bargaining. We're talking about, we can't quite make the case so we can plea bargain down. That means a crime has already been committed. I don't think our police on a Class B misdemeanor are going to go out there and be checking everybody that walks by a door in a car and looks through a window and charging them with attempt. It just seems to me that on a Class B misdemeanor, the police are not going to be doing the investigative work you would generally find in a felony conspiracy case. You're not going to be wiretaping somebody's phone. You're not going to be wiretapping the pawn shop that's ordering a particular ring to be stolen or whatever. Those are all felony cases. So I really don't know where this belongs in a misdemeanor, and that's the reason I would like to see this pulled out and brought back with a little bit more thought.
All right. Thank you. Any other further comment before we take a vote? All right. Madam Clerk, could you call the vote on the amendment?
So on the amendment to remove Section 4205-100, attempt, Mr. Jones.
Yes.
Ms. Hughes-Gandies.
No.
Ms. Hale.
No.
Mr. Edwardson.
Yes.
Mr. Bryson.
No.
Ms. Becker.
No.
Ms. Treem.
Yes.
Ms. Gladyszewski.
No.
Mayor Weldon.
No.
Motion fails.
Okay, that brings us back to the main motion. Unless anybody has further amendments, Mr. Edwardson.
I want to go back to the question that I had before Mr. Jones made his motion. And okay. This is based on what I heard, and I'm pretty sure I heard it right, Mr. Municipal Attorney say, and that was not attempt, but intent. And am I incorrect? When we were talking about the example of somebody walking by, with tools, walking by a window, and clearly they had the intent of breaking in, but for some reason that they didn't.
If that's specific to the theft with motor vehicle tools, yes.
Okay, but my question would be, he also brought up probable cause. Probable cause concerns an offense. Intent is an element of an offense, but it's only one. So say, for example, death or serious bodily harm. You have ability, opportunity, jeopardy, and manifest intent. If you're missing one of those, then you don't have an offense. So I guess, coming from an enforcement background, we would have to prove intent, and that's not all that easy to prove. So I don't know how we could say that we have probable cause for intent when intent is only an element of a crime, not a crime itself.
Okay, Mr. Attorney.
Sure. So if this is in relation to the possession of motor vehicle theft tools, the crucial element, if you will, would be possession of a tool with intent to use that tool to commit a theft of the vehicle or contents of the vehicle. So the two elements that we would have to have probable cause for would be that you have to have that tool that's recognizable as a vehicle theft tool, and then second, that we have to have evidence of intent. And all of our criminal offenses have some type of intent language. Some of our non-criminal offenses are strict liability, and so there's just mere possession could be. But what you have in front of you on this one is a misdemeanor that requires an intent level, and so that's something we prove every day. And if we have probable cause for it and it clears the judge if JPD decides to charge and the judge says, yes, I agree, there's probable cause, then that person has been arraigned. Prior to that, the judge can decide if our evidence is sufficient enough at that moment.
Follow up?
Sure.
I guess, and you haven't really said anything different than the scenarios that's in my head, and I'll talk about the scenario. My partner got attacked. Somebody tried to take his gun. It was pretty clear, and we could easily explain ability, opportunity, jeopardy, manifest intent. He had intended to cause serious bodily harm. But intent was only one portion of that. And what it sounds to me like you're saying is that intent by itself is a crime.
No, that is not what I'm saying. For this offense, it requires intent plus the tool.
Ms. Redwardson?
I'm trying to think of how this would play out. How would you approve intent in that case? And the first thing that pops into my mind, and we see it, you know, in the news from around the country, intent, depending on the jury or depending on the judge, could mean a lot of different things, and some of them not fair to people. So that really concerns me that we would say that this person who had these tools walking by this place had intent, but this person walking by this place with these tools didn't have intent. How would we explain that difference?
Sure. So there's probably a couple ways to describe it. Under the facts, under the circumstances, would be the easiest explanation. The example that I gave you earlier was an individual at night after the business had been closed. There's no other operating business on the property. The individual is peering in windows of the cars that are there with I'll just call it a pry bar in that individual's possession. A reasonable person would believe that that individual intended to use that tool to break into that car if that individual saw something that they wanted. And if JPD charged it, there would be, in my view, probable cause, but we're only half of the equation. That individual would have a judge and potentially even a defense attorney at that moment to challenge the probable cause determination. And if the judge didn't agree that there was probable cause, then the person is no longer arrested. If the judge agreed that, yes, there's probable cause, then the defense attorney can still fight the probable cause finding one more time. And then, obviously, that individual has a right to a jury and can push this all the way to a jury if that individual ultimately disagrees with the intent circumstances.
Mr. Richin, are you satisfied or are you still have more questions?
I probably have more questions than what we have time for. I just think that we ought to think hard and fast about things that require people to prove their innocence rather than the government proving their guilt.
Madam Mayor,
Mr. Attorney,
I do want to be clear on this one. The burden to prove somebody's guilty is my job, the two prosecutors. The individual has no duty to prove they're innocent.
All right. So we're going back to, we had a motion on the ordinance. Are there any objections to the ordinance? Mr. Jones, do you wish to speak to the ordinance?
No.
Any objection? Okay. Any further discussion or objection? All right. Madam Clerk, will you call the roll?
So for the passage of Ordinance 2019-33, Ms. Treen?
No.
Ms. Becker?
I was busy writing something, so I forgot to get back where we were. Yes.
Mr. Bryson?
Yes.
Mr. Edwardson?
No.
Ms. Hale?
Yes.
Ms. Hughes-Scandes?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
No.
Ms. Gladyszewski?
Yes.
Mayor Weldon?
Yes.
Motion carries 6-3.
All right, thank you, Madam Clerk. Let's take a 10-minute break.
It wouldn't take much to prove you wrong. It wouldn't take much to prove you wrong. I got my mind made up and my high heels on. It wouldn't take much to prove you wrong.
In her new novel, Heaven, My Home, Attica Locke addresses race and migration in contemporary Texas.
I'm trying to constantly pinpoint what it means for me as a Black American. How do I live and love in a place that does not always love me back?
The answer to that question and more tomorrow on Morning Edition from NPR News.
The 2019 League of Women Voters Municipal Candidate Forum is Tuesday at KTOO. All candidates for the Juneau Assembly and the Juneau School Board plan to participate. Members of KTOO and the Juneau Empire's newsrooms will moderate. Doors open at 6:30 p.m. for a candidate meet and greet and for the audience to submit written questions. The forum will begin promptly at 7 p.m. and will be broadcast live on KTOO FM. KTOO will also stream video through Facebook Live, YouTube, and KTOO.org.
You are tuned to KTOO Juneau and the live broadcast of the CBJ Assembly meeting. They are taking a short break. The weather for tonight calls for a chance of rain, lows in the mid-40s, and tomorrow mostly sunny, patchy fog, highs around 60. Wednesday is rain, and heavy rain fall possible later this week into early next week. And while we're waiting for them to come back from their break, I'm going to play some Sheryl Crow.
Stubborn as a weed, but he met his match on the day he met me. Even when I paddle my boat up shore, will the river keep on floating me right back to your door? No telling when the lightning strike. You make me feel I gotta hold on tight.
I gotta lie.
Start to blow me off my feet again.
I got a live wire. I got a live wire. Some people just built that way. Never looking back at the mess they make. I got a live wire. I got a live
wire.
Never knowing what the cat is.
Michelle.
My love for you is a hurricane.
Come crashing on me like a runaway train.
My love for you is a house on fire.
Well, I'm burning up with a strange desire.
People just
Yes, it will. Back up.
Y'all crazy.
Item E, Madam Clerk.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Ordinance 2018-11-AS, an ordinance appropriating to the manager the sum of $35,000 as funding for the Downtown Wayfinding Capital Improvement Project, funding provided by the Rasmussen Foundation and the Alaska Humanities Forum.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Mr. Manager.
The CBJ has received, through the Rasmussen Foundation and the Alaska Humanities Forum, grant awards to further the Downtown Wayfinding Project. The Rasmussen Foundation awarded CBJ $25,000, and the Alaska Humanities Forum awarded CBJ $10,000 to create and install the Community Voices Audio Wayfinding Project as part of the Downtown Wayfinding Project. The installations will be linked to the wayfinding and interpretive system to be installed throughout downtown in the spring of 2020. This project will illuminate the lesser-known histories of Juneau, its original and ongoing Tlingit community, Gold Rush era, fisheries, political histories, and geographical features, awakening Juneau residents and visitors to a deeper understanding of place and community. At the Public Works and Facilities Committee meeting on August 6, 2018, the committee approved staff to pursue the grants for this aspect of the Downtown Wayfinding Project with matching funds identified, $15,000 from Downtown Streets Project and $5,000 from Downtown Wayfinding Project. At July 1, 2019, Public Works and Facilities, the Appropriations and Downtown Streets Fund transfer were recommended to the Assembly for approval. I recommend you adopt this ordinance.
Thank you, Mr. Manager. Is there any member of the public that wishes to speak to this ordinance? Seeing and hearing none.
Madam Mayor.
Ms. Hale.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I would like to declare a potential conflict of interest. I have a business interest in a business that is located very close to one of the proposed wayfinding stations, and so there's a potential that that could benefit me financially by just the proximity to the wayfinding station. I believe that I could.
Have you talked to Mr. Attorney?
Yes, I have spoken with Mr. Attorney, and he advised me to declare this potential conflict. I believe that I could be fair and impartial, but I also would offer to recuse myself if the Assembly would so wish.
Okay, are there any member of the Assembly that thinks Ms. Hale should recuse herself for this one? Seeing and hearing none, Mr. Bryson.
Well, considering that I have a downtown business interest about a block away as well, I have no idea where these wayfair posts are going to be, but I might want to declare that I may have a potential conflict with a small business downtown, and
So, Mr. Bryson, I didn't even know it was a problem. Where they even were, you probably don't, but I'll look at
that. I think you're good.
All right. Does anybody have a problem with either Ms. Hale or Mr. Bryson voting on this topic? Okay, see you didn't hear it. Okay, so item E, we'll bring it back to the Assembly. And Ms. Hughes-Scannies, I'm going to skip you and go to Mrs. Becker because this will be the last ordinance she is going to bring before us. Ms. Becker.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I move we adopt Ordinance 2018-11AS and ask for unanimous consent.
For any objections? Seeing and hearing none, motion passes. Your last vote was a unanimous consent.
Oh my goodness, I didn't even think about that.
So that's a transfer. Okay.
And I was like, now I have to do a transfer.
Madam Clerk.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. T2025, a transfer of $15,000 from CIP R72-116 Downtown Streets to CIP D12-097 Downtown Wayfinding.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Mr. Manager.
This request is to transfer $15,000 in matching funds for the grant awards to further the Downtown Wayfinding Project as described in 2018-11AS. There are 5,000 additional matching funds already available in the Downtown Wayfinding Project. At the Public Works and Facilities Committee meeting on August 6, 2018, the committee approved pursuit of the grants and identified matching funds as described. At July 1, 2019, Public Works and Facilities Committee meeting, the transfer was recommended to the Assembly for approval. I recommend approval of this transfer.
Thank you, Mr. Manager. Any member of the audience wish to speak to this transfer? Then we'll bring it back to the Assembly. Ms. Hughes-Scandies.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I recommend the Assembly approve transfer T-2025 and ask unanimous consent.
Are there any objections? Seeing and hearing none, so moved. Okay, item G, for those just tuning in, has been moved to our October 14th meeting. So that brings us to unfinished business. And I see no unfinished business. Is that correct, Mr. Manager? Okay. And then that brings us to new business. Mr. Manager, are you taking these on?
I am, Madam Mayor. Madam Mayor, we have two senior citizen and hardship late file property tax exemption requests. Action required by the Assembly is to determine whether or not the late file tax assessment appeals will be heard. Evidence on the assessments themselves or the merit of the appeals is not relevant. The Assembly should consider each request separately and determine whether or not the property owner was unable to comply with the 30-day filing requirement. Burden of proof is upon the property owner to show the inability to file a timely appeal. In this context, the word unable does not include situations in which a property owner forgot about or overlooked the assessment notice, was out of town during the period for filing an appeal, or similar situations. Rather, it covers situations that are beyond the property owner's control and would prevent a property owner from recognizing what is at stake in dealing with it. Examples of this would include physical or mental disability serious enough to prevent a person from dealing rationally with their private affairs. Disagreeing with the amount of the assessment does not constitute inability to submit a timely appeal, nor does notice of assessment being sent to a wrong address. The property owner is responsible for keeping a current correct address on file with the assessor's office. If the Assembly decides to accept one or more late filed appeals, those assessment appeals will be referred to the assessor for review and action. I recommend the Assembly act on each of the two applications individually.
Thank you, Mr. Manager. We will give this one to Ms. Bodashevsky.
I would move that the Assembly accept Andrew Gamble's late filed appeal. Ask unanimous consent.
Just objection for purpose of question. I'm assuming we're just dealing with the fact that it's late filed, whether the inquiry on their letter, correct?
Okay. Correct. So this would be the late file for 2019. I just looked at that last sentence, and I don't know what that inquiry question relates to.
Okay. So I'll remove my objection. Any objections to the exemption for Mr. Gamble? All right, hearing none, so move.
Deputy Mayor.
Ms. Hale.
Thank you. For the next exemption, the filers of the objection are close personal friends, and I would request that I be recused from this. I don't believe that I could be fair and impartial in this case.
So it's up to the Assembly. Are we accepting, that's the easiest way to do it, are we accepting Ms. Hale's recusal of herself? Any objections? All right, seeing and hearing none. Ms. Hale, you get to go sit in the audience. Okay. Mr. Manager, go to you. We go to Ms. Lashevsky again. Sorry.
I would move that the Assembly accept the late filed application as if it were not late, just like the last one. For Diane Mayer's applicant.
All right. Any objection? Seeing and hearing none, that exemption is accepted also. All right. Welcome back, Ms.
May I come back?
Okay. Now we're moving on to staff reports. Mr. Manager, I'm assuming this is you.
Madam Mayor, with the Assembly's permission, I'd like to add a second staff report to briefly talk about the waterfront bid on the subport.
Okay, we will add that.
First, hazard mapping update. In July 2018, CBJ received a grant from the Federal Emergency Management Agency to conduct a study and update CBJ's adopted hazard maps from 1987. Tetra Tech, a consulting and engineering firm, has been selected through the CBJ bidding process to conduct the study. study will provide separate hazard maps for landslide and avalanche areas supported by a technical engineering report. If grant timelines remain as expected, the first draft of the maps and report will be available to the public for review and comment in approximately November 2020. In addition, CBJ Planning Commission will hold public hearings to consider adoption of the maps and the supporting analysis. The study area extends from approximately 2 miles south of downtown Juneau to 3 miles north of downtown Juneau. The grant covers all contract expenses and no CBJ match is required. The need for detailed avalanche landslide hazard analysis is documented in the 2013 Comprehensive Plan and Resolution 2813. In addition, CBJ development of the new area plan for downtown Juneau requires accurate identification of hazards to promote appropriate land use regulations and ensure public safety. No assembly action is needed at this time. More information is available at the Community Development Department.
Thank you, Mr. Manager. Any questions? Mr. Jones.
Thank you. Are there any hazards in Juneau, I guess, that aren't floodplain, but that's FEMA, outside of this 2 miles south of downtown to 3 miles north of downtown? I'm thinking Eagle Crest. I'm thinking out near the glacier, other mountain area. Why are we concentrating just on that, or we've not identified any hazards outside of that radius or length?
That's a good question, Mr. Jones. Mr. Manager.
Madam Mayor, so to clarify for those listening, we are talking about avalanche and landslide hazard. In our earliest hazard mapping from the early 70s, there were avalanche hazard areas identified in the Mendenhall Valley off the side of Nugget Mountain, off the side of Thunder Mountain. But those areas have not been near developable areas. So the focus, I believe, of mapped hazard areas and development areas is in the downtown corridor. And for that reason, I think the grant was sought after and won to study those areas further. So I would say not to say that there aren't other hazard areas in the borough, but these are the ones that are in closest proximity to homes and development areas.
Thank you, Mr. Manager. Follow-up, Mr. Jones?
Follow-up. Would this identify any potential conditions in Juneau, any place in Juneau similar to what happened at Sitka a couple years ago? I mean, Sitka was not identified as a hazard area. It's not a mountain. Mm-hmm. It wasn't looking at, you know, avalanches. And they had this tremendous landslide that lost a couple of lives. And they're going through a lot of litigation about that. And as we develop more lands, we, you know, look above Douglas, mm-hmm. Peterson Hill. We're starting to go up the mountains a ways for some of our development. So is there any ask in here of them looking around the borough to see if there's anything that might match some of Sitka's issues in Juneau's?
Madam Mayor, that is a question that I have worried about as well. And really the question is, are we missing something out there? I have looked at some of the reports from the Sitka event. I know it's an area of interest for Mr. Cheney, who's sitting in the audience. I believe Sitka has different geology related to pre-modern era explosions from Mount Udgecombe that have created different soil conditions that probably make it harder to spot their issues. In looking at the Juneau road system, I would readily acknowledge that we have a number of steep mountains, oversteepened slopes, but I do not think we have the same geological threat, not having a volcano in active memory in the borough, that would give us that kind of exposure. We have at the staff level discussed this issue, but this grant is not available for that wider look.
All right, thank you, Ms. Manager. Ms. Treen.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. In this process, which seems like a pretty long process, will there be any specific look at the potential impact of property values and the ability to procure financing to buy real estate in potentially hazardous areas?
Mr.
Manager. Madam Mayor, so this grant is for that hazard mapping, the financing of properties, and the potential change in valuation for properties, I think is really our separate municipal issue. I know of at least one property owner right now that has been attempting to sell a property, and it is encumbered by the appraiser's view of the 1972 hazard report, which was adopted. That property owner does not feel like they have a clear path to creating clear title to their property, in that there are few engineers available and none locally who are interested in doing hazard mapping work, as it's a high cost, high risk area of activity. This particular property owner, which I think provides an interesting case for us, demonstrates that having hazard maps and developed areas side by side can present problems, particularly when banks and lending institutions change the way they look at hazard analysis. So I think this is something that we are going to have to work through. Could be an assembly goal. So this question of disclosure, financing, insurance, I think presents a real problem to property transfer in hazard areas. But by and large, it's not the purpose of this grant. So the purpose of this grant is to better understand our hazard areas so that the public can be aware when they are considering purchasing property.
Mr. Jones?
And in light of that, the other example I can think of is the issue around Aurora Arms and the city property above that. It's, if you look at it, it's sort of hazard on both sides and sort of where it is, but one of the zoning requests is pretty high density, and there's some real concern about putting that kind of zoning there. So that's another example that could get held up for a year while we wait for this.
Mr. Manager?
And Madam Mayor, related, to, maybe there's another analogy related to Aurora Arms. So Aurora Arms has a financing problem related to a change in banking for those units, because in the event of a loss of structure from an event such as a fire, you wouldn't be able to build that building. We have the non-conforming ordinance that has worked its way through the Planning Commission, and I think will be at the Assembly at the October Committee of the Whole, which solves that, I hope, maybe November, Mr. Jones. Okay. We hope to get the non-conforming ordinance to the Assembly to amend our land use in a way that helps people with the changes in the banking world on those non-conforming properties. So it's there. I think there is an analogy there as well.
Any further questions for Mr. Manager? Seeing and hearing none, item B.
Madam Mayor, I think everybody caught the news that our waterfront bid on the subport lot was
a tad low.
There's been a lot of discussion in the community. I think it certainly caught local attention, local media, and I've had calls from national media as well. I think it invites wider question about tourism in general, and it certainly invites follow-up activity from the CBJ on our waterfront planning activities. Mr. Sherman, who is an executive vice president for Norwegian Cruise Lines, reached out to me, and he advised that he was coming to Juneau later in the month to begin the discussion about their plans. I think broadly, they are interested in a cruise ship dock. Specifically, he assured me they don't have a plan and that their approach was to demonstrably show that they would like to invest in the community and work towards what was possible. So we will be meeting with Mr. Sherman later in the month, and it would be my intent to do a more complete update at the upcoming Committee of the Whole on this issue. I think there's a lot of information that the Assembly would appreciate on kind of framing of tourism growth, both locally and in the region, which probably will help prepare you for other discussions about the tourism economy.
Any questions from Ms. Becker?
Thank you, Madam. Will you be able to put to him that this community voted overwhelmingly not to ever allow any dogs to be in that spot, or any ships or blocking the view or anything like that? So are you planning to stand behind that?
Madam Mayor, thank you. He has read our documents, and he is aware of the community planning position. And the company made the decision to make their aggressive bid anyway. I think the view from Norwegian is that they would like to grow their business, and they felt that making an aggressive bid on the property would get them a seat at the table, if you will. So he is aware of the memos that I've written on the topic. He's aware of the community plans. He is aware, I think the words that he used was that it would be a very heavy lift to develop that property.
I like impossibility more than heavy.
Any further staff report from Mr. Manager?
No, thank you, Madam Mayor.
Thank you. So moving on to his December reports, the mayor's report. First of all, I'd like to express our condolences to the city of Soldotna for their loss of their mayor, Nels Anderson. We had the pleasure of meeting him at the Alaska Municipal League meeting there. He's a very nice man, and he was well-loved in his community and done quite a few things for the community, so they feel his loss. I attended the Palmer State Fair as part of the people rotating through, as Ms. Treem did, also representing Juneau as a capital city, and at the Palmer Fair, where they had roughly 2,500 people stop by. So we talked a lot, and by our third day, the voice was almost gone. But anyway, I also attended the September 11th ceremony, and thank you for Mr. Edwardson for laying the wreath for us. I did that as part of our Rotary Club, so it's nice that we remember to never forget. And I was able to cut the ribbon at the Carl Reichus Boulevard for the opening of Peterson Hill. That was a fun event, and thank you to the land staff for putting on a fun event. So I met with Captain McDonald and the Army divers. They were a fun group, and they were in town doing diving exercises. And part of their exercise that they did was to help Juneau in tying down the lumbermen on both, redoing their anchors on both sides. So we appreciate their help with that. I was able to welcome the International Forum of Sovereign Wealth Funds. They were held their annual meeting here in Juneau, and that was pretty exciting because there was a lot of people from foreign countries, so it was nice to hear all the different languages and accents in the room. So, and we are thankful that they picked Juneau as their place to come. I also attended the forum with several of you of combating climate change silence. Thank you. I didn't want to say that wrong. Had a very good presentation. I also attended the Filipino community monthly dinner on Saturday, and once again they had excellent food, so it's always fun to go and eat. So for meetings, I've had a dock electrification meeting, and I've attended the latest airport board meeting and the BRH board meeting. Now that I'm an empty nester, I'll try to get to some of these more meetings just to, so people can see that the Assembly does care about these boards and commissions. I attended First Friday, and I was able to tour the Oyster Farm in Bridget Cove, and that was fun. Luckily, we picked a nice day to do that. Upcoming events, the Treadwell office building renovation ribbon cutting is this Sunday at 2 p.m. down at the Treadwell office building. Hands Across the Bridge, which celebrates September as National Recovery Month, is Saturday the 21st from 1:30 to 2:30, and you're to meet at the Federal Building. And also part of National Recovery Month is the General Recovery Fest 2019 on September 28th from 12:30 to 4:30 at Centennial Hall. And their theme this year is Change Yourself, Change the World. So, and I have flyers for those, so I'll pass those out. Also on the 21st is Juneau National Drive Electric Week EV Roundup at Juneau District Heating Lot, and it starts at 11, and I don't have an end date. Ms. Becker, would you know that by chance? So it starts at 11. I think they're for there for about 3 hours.
I think so.
Okay, somewhere between 2 and 3. So it's kind of fun to see all the different models of electric vehicles out there.
That's 11:30 to 2.
Okay. 11:30 to 2, so I stand corrected. So go there at 11:30 instead of 11. September 29th is Gold Star Family Day to honor those who have lost a loved one serving in the U.S. military. I'm more tied into the military these days. Several of us, including some of our staff, are attending the Southeast Conference in Sitka. So this Wednesday through Friday, several of us will be out of town in Sitka. A reminder to everybody that early voting has started. And Madam Clerk, I get this right, Mendenhall Mall from 11 to 6 and City Hall from 8 to 5. Is that correct?
And Madam Mayor, Saturday's at the Mendenhall Mall and it's noon to 4 as well.
Okay, thank you for that. So you can get out and early vote if you so desire. So for my comments, we have the Child Care Task Force this fall, and the other issue that I'd like to look at is tourism. And then we've had several people concerned throughout the year, and this latest bid has certainly stirred some more concerns up. So I'm trying to figure out exactly what kind of group and what their mission's going to be and what their end game's going to be. So I'm asking my fellow Assembly members to put your thinking caps on and think about some of that stuff. And if you get back to me on Sunday with any suggestions, that would be great. And we'll probably task at least a couple with you doing something with that. But again, not quite sure what I'm going to do there, but we'll probably need to address it sooner than later. So we'd rather be progressive than be reactive to it. So with that, the mayor's report is done, other than it's been a pleasure having Ms. Becker here. And she does get official goodbye next assembly meeting on the 14th, but this will be her last voting and report. So we'll look forward to that. We're saving you till the end tonight. So with that, we'll start with Mr. Bryson down there.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I do like this little bit of slower assembly time. I had a JADC meeting on the 4th. I went to the Peterson Hill ribbon cutting ceremony on the 6th. Unfortunately, I missed my planning commission because I went down for my mom's 70th birthday and my brother's 40th birthday. I went to the Central Labor Council picnic on the 2nd. I was at the 9/11 ceremony. And then we've done a few other campaign style events and forums, and that's all I have going on right now. Thank you very much, Madam Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Bryson. Ms. Hale.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Last assembly, I let people know that there was a potential affiliation study that Bartlett was working on a possible RFP for, and that caused a little bit of a stir. So there's been some discussion at the Bartlett Regional Hospital Board level, and it's going to come up at Friday's Governance Committee meeting at 1 p.m. I won't be there because I will be in Sitka at Southeast Conference. But just to let you know, I'm tracking that, and I'll keep you guys apprised.
We appreciate that.
You bet. And it's still very much in draft form, so what they're doing is looking at an RFP to kind of do a SWOT analysis, but I'll keep you up to speed. Relative to the hospital, the ophthalmologist has started. He actually will be conducting surgery beginning this Saturday. So he'll be conducting cataract surgery, and I know that because I have a friend getting cataract surgery. So he's here and will be begin doing surgeries and also macular degeneration injections, which sounds really awful, but there you have it. I'm not there, obviously. Juno Commission on Sustainability is working on a proposal for sustainability awards. They're drafting criteria right now. I just want to give the Assembly a heads up that that's something that they're looking at, but that's going to be a long ways out. I just want to give you early notification. They appreciate the funding to update the climate impacts report. And they're working on that. They did indicate, or Dr. Powell, I guess now, indicated that with the university, the university is starting to lose staff and people are really sort of hunkering down and less willing to volunteer on things as some of this turmoil with the university has occurred. But they have gotten volunteers to work on that report. And finally, there was no Public Works and Facilities Committee meeting since our last Assembly meeting. And as I said, I'm going to Southeast Conference, and I will also be doing that hands across the bridge because I've been sober for more than 10 months.
Good for you.
Congratulations.
Are you done, Ms. Hale?
I am.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Hughes-Gandy.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I will try to remember everything I did. I also, this is going to be all out of order. This is the order I remembered it in. I appreciated Rotary doing the September 11th remembrance ceremony. That was very moving. Thank you, Mr. Edwardson, for laying the wreath. The Peterson Hill ribbon cutting was great fun and also moving to dedicate the Carl Reichus Boulevard. I got to go to the Community Voices audio wayfinding, one of the story circles they had, and that was, I wish I could have attended more of it, but filled with great stories and people talking about Juneau history, and neat to see it at an early stage, depending on what it will become. I also attended the Dr. Catherine Hayhoe climate change interfaith. She was a very captivating speaker. And that was also really rewarding. I made it to a Filipino membership of community hall membership meeting. I had the great enjoyment of being on Action Line this morning with some of my fellow assembly members. Always enjoy that. I made it out to the Pioneer Home for the ice cream social and check in with a different group of our community. I attended the CLC picnic, which is always a good time. And the Downtown Business Association, I was able to make that meeting. They are talking about their ambassador program and how they might be shifting that for the next tourist season, looking at moving towards employees from contractors or from using a contract and getting ahead of their map design. The Juneau Commission on Aging is full of activity. Juneau Economic Development Council is sort of taking the lead with the survey at this point and where they are, and the commissioners are taking a step back and just providing guidance. They were examining the postcard while I was there of what's going to inform people that we are doing the survey again and making sure that reflected. Everything looks like it's right on track. And considering how they can continue to support the city in our Vintage Park project. And that concludes my report.
So was this morning, how many assembly members can you fit in the recording booth?
4 so far.
Thank you, Ms. Hughes-Gandy. Ms. Treve.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. We just had a terrible time on Action Line this morning. It was awful, no fun at all. Let's see, the Aquatics Board met on August 27th. They elected new officers, is the word I'm looking for, and my favorite local government nerd, Will Muldoon, was elected chair. And also concerning the Aquatics Board, they are discussing changes to the private swim lesson policy. There have been a couple of emails I just want everybody to know that there are no plans to stop offering private lessons at the Juno pools. The changes they are discussing would require anybody providing private swim lessons at a CBJ facility to be an employee of CBJ, and this is to ensure that all of the instructors have the right training and certification and pass background checks. So those changes are just a proposal right now, and nobody is talking about eliminating private swim lessons from the pool. Okay, Travel Juno updates. Let's see what they're doing. The National Association of Social Workers Biennial Conference will be held at the end of this month from September 24th through 27th, and the Alaska Association of Harbor Masters and Port Administrators will meet September 30th through October 4th, and Travel Juno will be participating in a panel. Liz Perry will also be attending Southeast Conference to participate in a panel discussion about tourism. I attended many of the same events that everybody else up here has been attending. They were all great fun, but one I really want to, something I've done that I really want to point out is I attended Dr. Laura Vess's social problems class at University of Alaska Southeast. I was her guest speaker last Friday, and the students in her class were really bright and engaged. I thought they would be bored listening to me talk about city government for an hour, but they were not, and they were particularly focused on tourism and the pollution from the cruise ship. So they had a lot of really great questions, only about half of which I was able to answer. Thank you to Dr. Vess for having me in her class. And that's my report.
All right, thank you, Ms. Tree. Mr. Edwardson.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Been doing a lot of traveling in August and September. It's August and September now, right? So hopefully that's not going to slow down coming up. But let's see, hopefully next month I'll be able to give some reports on the airport board and LEPC and what's the other one? Eagle Crest. Eagle Crest always seems to be on the night that we have interviews on. But
what's that? You control that.
Not entirely, no. Let's see, we had a human resources meeting, committee meeting right before this, in which we received an annual report from the American with Disabilities Act Committee. They have actually a pretty comprehensive report, and one thing that I committed to do with the permission of the committee was to write either a cover letter or a memo to the city pointing out areas where the ADA committee has some recommendations for maybe education or awareness on how to behave towards that population. So I didn't want to take a chance on, you know, I'm assuming that the city reads it anyway, but they took their time to come and advise us, and that's what their job is, so I figured I would offer that up. Becky Harrington gave a very compelling report, and she did offer her help for any one of the recommendations that they have. let me see. With that, we had a board appointment recommendation. The Human Resources Committee recommends that the Assembly reappoint Pam Mueller-Gay for a term to begin immediately and end August 31st, 2022.
Any objections to the appointment? Seeing, hearing none, Pam is appointed.
And we also discussed appointments to the Douglas Advisory Board, and the Human Resources Committee recommends we reappoint Terry Tibbetts and Mary K. Pusich for terms beginning October 1st, 2019 and ending September 30th, 2022.
Any objections to either one of those appointees? Seeing, hearing none, Ms. Tibbetts and Ms. Pusich.
And last for the Human Resources Committee. The committee heard a presentation on the Community Development Block Grant and recommends approval of CDD's recommendation to approve the St. Vincent de Paul's application. I move that the staff draft a resolution to be brought back to the Assembly for consideration.
You guys get that? Okay. Make sure you check in with Mr. Attorney and make sure he has what you just said.
Will do. And the clerk, yes. Yeah.
And the clerk, too.
So I'd like to thank Glacier Valley Rotary, not just for this year's 9/11 memorial, but for all of them. It wouldn't have happened without the Glacier Valley Rotary, and each year they put in basically yeoman's effort to put on that ceremony and recognize something that we should never forget. So thank you, the Rotary. And I also would like to thank Mary, not just for the couple of years that we served together, but for all of your years of service to the city and borough of Juneau.
All right, thank you, Mr. Edwardson. Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The Finance Committee met August 21st. We went over the revenue updates and some sales tax reports and impacts on the state budget. The next regular meeting is September 25th, and the mayor will be chairing that meeting. I will not be attending. The first meeting of the Finance Committee to look at the financial stability review is October 2nd. Again, the mayor will be chairing that. If you can't make any of those dates that was in that note, please check in with Ms. Cosgrove so that we know who's going to be there and if there's any homework or any preliminary information that Ms. Cosgrove can give out to keep people on task and through this process would be really great. The Juneau School District met on the 11th of this month. I guess actually they had a retreat on August 24th that I attended. That was the first of their process of developing their next five-year strategic plan. And then September 10th, they actually had their board meeting and their work session. At that meeting, they extended the superintendent's contract and they set the goals and priorities for the 19-20 school year. Have a copy if anybody's interested in looking at that. They basically set five goals for the superintendent for that year, for this next year. In addition, in the superintendent's report at that meeting, she mentioned that their enrollment is up this year. And she mentioned a figure that their enrollment was up about 80 students. To make it really clear, they're up 80 from their projections. In actuality, they're up 10 people. Because last year they predicted low and they had an increase. This year they predicted low. But actually, it's 10 students more than last year. However, the fact that they budgeted low has some potential that if it holds through the October, November, December machinations of the state and everything, it could mean a potential in January of coming in and requesting about $150,000 more from the CBJ to fund the cap. The other possibility on that is the legislative operating grant for FY20, which was part of the governor's discussions and the governor's vetoes and the governor's this and the governor's that, it ended up in court. So if it loses in court, the potential is that the school district would be in a deficit situation of about $422,000. If it wins in court, then, and that's already baked into the budget, so if they lose in court, there's a possibility of a loss of $422,000, which could affect the ADM account and could affect how much we owe. I sent the superintendent's report verbatim to our finance director, and he is in the process of scheduling routine meetings with the finance staff of the school district so that we better stay on top of that with both him new and Sarah John is in her second year. So there's a lot of moving parts on the school district's budget that will continue to affect the assembly over time. In deference to Mr. Bryson's report on Planning Commission, in the last month or since our last meeting, I have attended a lot of meetings related to CDD. The neighborhood meeting on the rezone on the top of Cordova Street that was held at the Douglas Library had about 30-some people there. Lots of questions, not too well received by the neighborhood up there on Pioneer and Knoll, and pretty big rezone. I attended the CDD FEMA flood map revisions, which I thought was kind of a strange thing to have until I realized once I got there and was talking to people that when I first came on the assembly, I think even when Ms. Klaszewski first came on the assembly, we were dealing with flood map revisions. But because of that public process, this is a continuation of that. I thought we had settled that, but we haven't. They made a couple of changes. There was probably more staff and more FEMA people there than there was neighbors that were concerned, but there was about 15 people there. I talked to the staff about the need that when and if that comes back before the assembly, that they work with the committee to hold to educate the new persons on here that haven't been through that, because I remember feeling sort of blackmailed into approving it, because if we didn't, all these homeowners would lose insurance, and then we did, and they still haven't approved it. So it's kind of bizarre. I have attended several of the ad hoc committee on the non-conforming ordinance that the manager talked about earlier. I do believe they're pretty close to bringing it to the Planning Commission, but I would point out that the Planning Commission, in my meeting with the director to talk about this and the overlay district rezone, which I didn't understand why they were sort of doing those two things together, and I spent a good hour with the director. A lot of people on the Planning Commission are traveling, and so I'm not sure they're meeting in October. I think their meeting dates kind of got blown up with a lot of travel. So I don't know exactly when they might be ready to come back if the Planning Commission can't get a meeting together. They also have a committee on overlay district zoning, which is due to expire for the downtown, and they're trying to work through all of that. Doing a lot of wordsmithing and a lot of work on that. I have missed the last three or so meetings of the downtown blueprint group, but staff is really good about putting out minutes and those kinds of things electronically. So I've got a file that's got every one of those meetings, and I've read some of it, but I haven't read more of it. I have some concerns with the Planning Commission and, you know, sort of not being able to get quorums to come together for Planning Commission meetings, because then it jams up to us. And I think, in particular, the ordinance on the overlay district zoning and the ordinance on the non-conforming is going to take some real understanding and homework by this assembly to understand it. It's long, it's sort of convoluted, so I recommended them they try to work with the manager and the deputy mayor and talk about maybe at least two COWs to get the assembly educated enough to understand what they're doing. My only comments are good luck to all those who are running for office. My wife and I voted today. We only voted for winners, so you're in good stead. You can keep guessing on who I actually voted for. I will say for the public, since I've had some other comments, I did vote on all three, the bed tax, the Jack, and the Centennial Hall, and I hope everybody else in this community does also. I know Ms. Becker has a committee the whole meeting on the 30th, but I look forward to the 14th and saying goodbye at that meeting, sadly, but I've appreciated my 7 years serving with her. I appreciate the fact that she taught at least one of my kids, which dates us both. That's my report, Madam Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Okay, we'll skip to Ms. Klaszewski.
Huh? Okay, thank you, Madam Mayor. The Committee of the Whole met on the 26th of August and forwarded to the Assembly the Juno J-Res Heat Smart, so that was made it through our ordinances for introduction today. We also talked about disposal of Vintage Park subdivision land for assisted living development and talk about possible ways to do that, and staff is going to do an RFP and move that forward. We also had an update on our assembly goals, which we will be updating again in December when we have a retreat. Our next COW is next Monday. And about those dates, the COW in November is November 18th is a Monday that is right before AML, and a lot of the staff is already going to be gone to AML. So we're going to move that the November 18th COW to December 2nd. So cancel your November 18th. Have a nice time at AML if you're going. The staff will be there by then, and we'll do it on the 2nd. I went to a lot of the same things everyone did, Labor Day picnic, the Peterson Hill, Carl Reiches Boulevard. I went to the Dr. Hayhoe's talk at the Chapel by the Lake, and so I heard a different one than you guys did, but she was very interesting. And then I have a couple of questions about sustainability. There's lots of different threads. The current Juno Commission on Sustainability is very focused on energy. In the past, they worked for a long time on a livestock ordinance, and then they sent it to the law department and the planning commission, and that's been in there for a long, long time, so I'm bringing it up to ask. You don't have to answer me now if you don't know where it is, but wherever it is, can it be resurrected and found? And let us know where that is. They worked on it for a while, and I'm not sure if it's past the planning commission or not. And the other thing is community gardens. Both of these are geared toward more local food production, and community gardens have come up off and on in the past at this level, and there's one in downtown Douglas. Of course, there's the big one by the rifle range, and hopefully we can work on, again, finding more spots for those. Anyway, just wanted to bring it up to put it back on the radar. And then one thing, I was reading an article in the World Economic Forum about millennials being getting more involved in government, and they mentioned that Houston, Grand Rapids, Philadelphia, and Omaha all have millennial board. And I got to thinking, we have a commission on aging, but we don't have anything on the other end to get more people involved, get, you know, more people. So I would ask Mr. Edwardson to think about that if you want to. We have a commission on the one end of life, but not on the beginning, and it would be nice to get more people involved, younger people involved. So that's what I have.
Thank you, Madam Gladyszewski. We did point out to Mr. Cheney at the Peterson Hill that there was a Ms. Hale and I that was a little green space. It could be a community garden if he so desired to make it one.
We did.
Mr. Jones, we'll go back to you quickly.
Yeah, that just reminded me of one thing on the school district. They also did a first reading on a boundary change, and the boundary change affected Mendenhall River and Hawk Bay School based on the potential of Peterson Hill lot selling and potential children moving in there, and so the school district did take their first look. Mr. Cheney was there to describe what he thought might happen over the next couple of years. So probably in their October meeting, they will have a second reading on that particular boundary change. Trying to get that boundary change in before, so that if people looked at purchasing lots, they would know what school district their kids would.
All right, thank you, Mr. Jones. Ms. Becker, save the best for last.
Thank you, Mayor. Lands Committee met last week, and the main topic was the district heating. I hope everyone has the packet that I put in between people at the front table there. The things that you have are the papers that were given to the Lands Committee. I wanted you all to see the things that we had. We talked about it. It was basically the only topic that we were able to put some time into. There's a motion made to send the ordinance to to the assembly and to the committee of the whole. And so therefore I move that we send this ordinance and all the papers that are connected to it to the committee of the whole meeting on the 23rd of this month.
Well, it's already going to the committee of the whole, so I don't know that we need a motion.
I don't know that it was already going. I mean, we want it to go, but I don't know.
I believe Ms. Hale's motion moved it to the committee of the whole. Mr. Attorney.
All right, if that's it, then that's it. Ms. Hale's motion did say to bring it to the assembly, and then likely to the committee of the whole. So I didn't want to make any mistakes on that since it didn't get to the assembly, to make sure it does get to the committee hall, the next committee of the whole meeting.
And then on the next meeting, we'll let the chair talk about that. I don't know.
Yeah, it's not going to make it this meeting. My understanding is the attorney hasn't had a chance to go through it all together, and we have an agenda already full. So it will be whenever we can get it from Mr. Palmer. But not on Monday.
It was a time to do the discussions, including whatever the attorney wants to give us. So I don't know what you do when there's a roadblock, but not going to the assembly, it's not going to go to the committee of the hall. It's a unanimous vote from the lands to do that, and it certainly has been enough time to get it on the committee of the hall. And that is the place where the discussion by the entire assembly would take place. Naturally, I can't force it if you're not going to do it, and I won't be here after that. So I guess probably all kinds of things can happen, but I think it's wrong. I think it should go to the committee of the whole. It was the vote of the lands committee to do that. No. I'm still requesting that.
Well, it's going to the committee of the whole. It's just not going to make the next meeting. It's going to go to the committee of the whole. It's just not going to make Monday's meeting.
If I could say if there's any part ready, we could talk about it on Monday, but we'll have to talk to the attorney.
Well, the attorney does have a number of things he wants to talk about. That's why it's going to the committee of the whole, is to get that stuff out.
All right, do you have more to report up, Pod?
I do. Will definitely tell you that I am extremely disappointed, and even your vote was just send it. So I just am very disappointed in that because I expected it to go to the committee of the whole, the 23rd. So the campus council, we met last week or so. The chancellor discussed the operating budget impacts, and the governor and board of regents agreed to a 3-year reduction of the budget, as you, I think, have read in the newspaper already. And that what that will boil down to for the University of Alaska for this year, it won't be a loss of the budget as it was already established, but there will be a cut of 2.59 million as a proportionate of the share of the division of the $70 million in 3 campuses and this part for our campus. And the chancellor said the considerations for the University of Alaska Southeast is budget reductions, administration realignment, and statewide going from 3 campuses to 1 accredited campus. So there could be some definite big changes in our community for the university. Docks and Harbors issues passed tonight. The issues about the dock security station and the bid award both passed tonight. Amazing how that got to the assembly in such few days. seeing that it was only a few days ago that that was on a noon meeting. The Alaska, that was sarcastic and nasty, but I get to do that at my last meeting because I'm very, very upset with many of you in this room. Alaska Committee is planning a retreat. The legislative reception is planned at this time for January 22, and the annual meeting will be in January after the reception, at which time new members of the Alaska Committee will be elected. I am an elected member, not an appointment of the Assembly. So
excuse
I will
me.
Continue to be on the Alaska Committee. Yes.
When is this occurring, this Alaska Committee?
What is what?
When is the Alaska Committee
that
meeting?
The reception or the meeting?
The meeting when people, new
the
members
meeting
will
is going to be after the 22nd of January.
Okay.
But that hasn't been established yet.
Okay.
We're going to get the reception finished and then have the meeting.
And then add new members.
Okay. Thank you.
Chamber, just really is getting to have, I just think, great meetings, great speakers. The last three, Kirby Day and Liz Perry came and talked about tourism. And Midge Moore, maybe it's Midgey. Midgey Moore. I talked about the Juno Food Tours, which is a new business in town. And District Attorney Angie Kemp talked about penalties and for changes in the law. And basically, the ordinance was adopted tonight. And what she said was this, the new law helps prosecutors because we didn't have, things were not getting to prosecutors because actually the law was not quite strict enough. So it looks like there might be help there. I went to two ribbon cuttings, the Jammy Pharmacy. A couple, you forgot to mention that. Yes, there were a few of us there.
I knew there was a couple.
And that was really kind of fun.
It was.
That
nice.
Was good.
Nice to see a pharmacy for Jamie. It's in the Housing First basement or downstairs. And then I went to ribbon cutting for Peterson Hill and was fortunate enough to get to say a few words with our mayor. The September 11, in my opinion, was about one of the nicest ceremonies that I've been to. It was just perfectly timed, perfectly worded, and just very meaningful. And Miss Cole Hayes, and I don't know her first name, but I think she might be a senior, the vocalist, just blew me away. I just think she just was, every note was perfect. Every single note, she was just amazing. I went on Action Line with Pete Caron, and I went to the Catherine Cahill talk. I really enjoyed her. She's an amazing speaker. Very, very good, I thought. Let's see. I'm going to Southeast Conference, leaving tomorrow. Good luck to the candidates. It's going to be a tough fight. I hope you persevere. And we plan to see, someone plans to see you back. I don't, we'll be people watching you. And good luck to you tomorrow. We'll be here thanking of you. And I have enjoyed working, except for tonight. I'm not happy tonight. I am not a happy camper. This is wrong. We talked about this. And so, that's all I've got to say. That don't know why there is such opposition or roadblocks, but for something that the Assembly already voted support for, and everyone says this is a good idea, it's going to be good for our community. But meanwhile, we will do whatever we can to make sure it doesn't happen. And that's my view, and so I'm not happy about this. This is all of my report.
Thank you, Ms. Baker. Any further comments, questions, other than to give Ms. Baker a little round of applause? Anything further before the Assembly? Seeing, hearing none, we're adjourned.
What days did you give us?
You're tuned to KTOO Juno. This concludes the on-air portion of the CBJ Assembly meeting. The next meeting is October 14th. I'm Martha Moore, your host. Thanks for listening and have a great night.